listening to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Welcome to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail, the weekly radio talk show where we unwrap and reveal the secrets that successful people use, and you can too. Available at successunwrappedradio.com. My special guest this week is Guy Finley, the best-selling author of over 25 self-development books and audio programs that have sold over a million copies in 15 languages. He has also done hundreds of seminars, taught thousands of people how to better themselves, and lectures at his own nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation in Oregon. As a young man, Guy achieved success as an award-winning songwriter and musician, but gave that up in favor of his search for truth and higher wisdom. Guy, welcome to the show, and thanks for being here.
You're very welcome.
You were born into fame and fortune. Does that type of upbringing ensure success, as a lot of people think?
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh at that. No, Heather. About all we really know it ensures is that there's about a 92% chance you're going to wind up a psychopath.
Why is that?
Because we're not fulfilled by being given things. At least not the things that the world looks around and says would make a human being happier and healthier. We're meant as men and women to enter into the world and discover in ourselves a sort of parallel excellence that then looks for its counterpart in the world. And we develop ourselves by working, by struggling, by coming to grips with those places in ourselves that we have yet to find out about and that limit us, and then in those discoveries, transcending those limitations and growing past and beyond who we have been over and over again. So when a person is given the things that most of us think, if only we could be given, that our lives would be better, by and large, unless there's something in them that is unique, they will be somewhat hampered by it. I have no doubt of that. I grew up, as you just said, I grew up with Desi Arnaz Jr., Dino Martin, Jerry Lewis Jr., all the kids. They were my running partners. And I can tell you to a one, they're a mess.
Tell us who your father was.
My dad, his name was Larry Finley. Basically, Heather, he was the late-night television talk show pioneer before Johnny Carson and Jack Parr, which are names maybe a lot of people don't even know anymore. That's one of the phenomena. I'm in my late 50s now, and most of the individuals that were very famous when I was a younger person and individuals, incidentally, in my own career that I wrote music for, most people don't even know them anymore. But back then, in those days, my father was very very prominent in the entertainment and tape industry world. He was the Time Magazine Man of the Year in electronics and video, and he had a very celebrated life, very successful, and a good man, too, Heather, I might say.
Okay, so how did you overcome that handicap of being born into fortune and find the struggle that allowed you to go back and find success again?
Because I think all the things that make us grow, I was able at a very young age, tell you the truth, Heather. I don't know, up there in your neck of the woods, have you ever heard of the Hollywood Christmas Parade?
Yes.
It's a fairly, it's tradition for who knows how long, 50 years, 60 years. And there's a sheriff of the Hollywood Christmas Parade every year, and all the celebrities and top athletes, they ride in the cars and they wave at people, and there's great floats and all of that business. Well, my father one year was the sheriff, and so that year I was there. I was about 6 years old, 7 years old, no older than that. And people, names that people won't know anymore, but Steve Allen, James Mansfield, they were all in our car. And I remember when we were getting ready for this, they call it the staging ground. That's where you line up your cars and what position you're going to be in and all that. And you wouldn't have believed how angry all of these celebrities were that they weren't in certain cars in certain order. And that, along with the stench of alcohol and the kind of fear that I felt in the room at that age, really had an impact on me. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, even though I couldn't qualify it, something's not right here. If these are the people that the world looks to as being the stellar individuals and the icons of what all are struggling to be like, boy, this isn't what I want to be like. And that's where it started for me. I didn't want to grow up being afraid and angry.
So you say we're all created to succeed and the universe is set up to help us do it.
Yes.
So how can we tap into that success we were meant to have?
Start.
That sounds pretty easy.
Well, you know what? It's a lot easier said than done. Because, you know, every one of us will make one start. We'll think to ourselves, I would like to be this kind of person or that kind of person. And we decide that we set our compass on whatever it is. I'm going to be a great artist, a singer, a songwriter, a performer, a mathematician, a doctor. And then we run into the first obstacle in our way, the first thing that stands in our way, and we crumble. And if not the first time, within three or four times, most of us, if we can't succeed at what it is that we thought we wanted to do, then we will take the path of least resistance. And so when we take the path of least resistance, what is it that's really governing our choice? It's a part of ourselves that says that there's no further for us to go with what we love. And if there's one thing that all of my work is about over the last 35 years, it is to enable individuals, empower them really, to discover that if they have a love for something, that what they love has a love for them and waits for them, literally, to pass through those parts of ourselves which in its resistant nature, in its insistence, and we have these parts of us that don't want to change, that want to keep us who and what we have been. And when we bow to those parts of ourselves that limit us and hold us captive, then it's the same as acquiescing in our consciousness to a nature that can never outgrow that place in ourselves. And we wind up being individuals who've compromised, or worse, quit, and resent our lives and others for the rest of our existence, instead of, which is again what we're talking about, being unstoppable, discovering that what we seek seeks us, and that all we have to do is be willing to pass through. And here's the big key to the first part of our conversation. The only thing, Heather, that stands in any of our way is what we have yet to understand about ourselves, and that's it.
So how do we learn about ourselves?
Walk through it. Look how simple this is. We're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Okay. We start, and then we walk through it.
That's pretty easy.
And it's great because you're playing the right role here for everybody that's listening. We want drive through success, Heather.
Yeah.
Right? I want to you know, pull up to the window, push the button. That'll be a million a year, no problems with anybody questioning my authority, and a six pack ab to go. And then we expect with somehow or other that there's supposed to be some book or somebody's going to, you know, tap us on the forehead or whatever it is, and we're going to have that. It doesn't work like that. And anybody that says it does is charging a lot of money to tell you lies that you're paying them to be told those lies.
So if the things that love us are waiting for us to find them, how do we find them?
Let's take an example, okay? What do you like? What do you love to do?
Play with cats.
Okay. Well, you know what, even that, we could even take that, but we need to take something a little more challenging.
Okay.
let's say, for just as an example, that you wanted to be an artist or a writer, yes, something like that?
Sure.
Because most of us have something, some inclination towards working with that which is creative. Now, I'm not saying loving cats isn't creative, but we're talking about how to pass through what stands in our way, so we need to understand that. Now, when you love something, isn't it true that when you love something, you pretty much give yourself to it completely?
Yes, and it doesn't feel like work when you're doing it.
And it doesn't feel like work when you're doing it. Now, when we love something, let's say I have a love. I'll make it a little personal for the sake of the listeners. About 5 years ago, I started playing golf. I really love golf. And let's say that a person wants to pick up a sport like golf because they love it. Now, in order to play golf, although most people may not really understand this, it's a game of attention, it's a game of balance, and it's a game of principles. And so you've got this attention, you've got balance, and you have principles, and the principles are what one must do to effectively hit the ball well. Now, if you don't let the principles guide you, you'll never hit the ball well. You've seen movies where guys bend their clubs and throw them in the pond and stuff like that because they get mad, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in order to let a principle teach us what it is that we need to learn, first we have to love it, just what we were talking about. If you love something, it doesn't seem like work, but lots of times, in order to learn something that you love, It can be work, but you don't mind the work. You follow me?
Right.
So why do we have to let principles teach us? Because it is principles that make us excel at art, principles that make us excel at music, principles at sports, meaning that it is our willingness to align ourselves with those principles that empower us through those principles. Because a principle is sort of a medium ground between the power. You look at a Tiger Woods or an Anacostaurus and swing that club, and you see them, that you recognize there's a kind of power behind what they're doing, a confidence in what they're doing, and it's because they have approached those principles and mastered those principles so thoroughly that there's a natural conduit between that power, that grace, that balance, that tempo, and their body, so that they literally become a perfect reflection of the principle. Now, here's the important part. No one masters a principle, really. What happens is that the principle masters us.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Let's say I want to learn how to play a piano. I have to learn the principles, but in order to learn the principle, I have to subordinate myself to it. I have to actually surrender myself to the principle in order for there to be an alignment between myself and that principle, whatever it may be. And the reason this is such an important idea is because so many of us run into those moments where we want to approach power in living, we want to be in control, in charge of our own lives, to be confident men and women, but we run into those principles by which the only way we can come to those powers that we long to have, and instead of subordinating ourselves, surrendering ourselves to the principle, we run into them and they're hard to do, we can't get it, and we let, instead of the principle bring us into the power, we resist the principle and then go look for an easier path and therefore miss the opportunity to place ourselves in alignment with those powers, with that love that makes us unstoppable, because it helps us and it puts us in a proper relationship with principle, and then we get the power.
Now, a lot of people say they don't have the time or the energy to pursue what they want and achieve what they want. What's your answer to that?
Balderdash.
Again, it's easy.
Yeah, I love this. Great questions, and I get one-word answers. All right, look, here's the deal, Heather. Because I know that's true, God, this, and unfortunately it's getting worse in today's world. More and more pressure on us because there's more and more information, more and more things that have to be done in order to just simply get by. But here is a very beautiful and empowering idea. Whoever is listening to what we're speaking of, if they have a love for anything, let's say they have a love for nature. Let's say they love animals, and they would like, in their heart of hearts, they would love to be a veterinarian. But they look at their life, and they're 38 years old, and they're barely making it where they're living, and they've got responsibilities and all the rest of that. And there's no way they're going to find time to take the night school or do whatever they're going to do, because when they start thinking about what's necessary in order to succeed, maybe with a new career path, in floods, and I'll ask you, in floods what?
All kinds of other stuff.
Yeah, all kinds of negative. I'm too tired. I don't have the energy. There's no way. I'm not smart enough. It's not going to work out. It never has. In other words, our mind, when we imagine what it is that we want, even though we feel the pleasure of our imagining, we're flooded with a host of negative images that kind of put the big kibosh on our wish to change. So now what we're saying, and this is why I say it's so important, that any of us who are willing to learn the truth of ourselves, we can succeed in ways that we can't imagine. All we need is a little love, one little part of ourselves that loves something, whatever it may be, and everyone can afford. Could you afford 5 minutes a day for something that you loved?
Sure.
Now here's what the mind says. Yeah, but 5 minutes a day, that's not going to get me anywhere. You know, that's not enough, so why start? I'm playing the devil's advocate here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the point. If we gave 5 minutes a day to our, whatever it may be, maybe I have a love for God, but I'm too busy, my mind's too rattled, I don't have time to read the books I want, whatever it may be, 5 minutes. 5 minutes, read about cats. 5 minutes, read about what it means to serve someone else besides yourself. 5 minutes to sit quietly and think about what you love. I promise you, Heather, that if we start and we give what we love 5 minutes, what we love will give us the energy very soon, if not immediately, to give it 10 minutes. And then when we love what we love for 10 minutes, it'll give us what we need for 30 minutes. And the energy that we need, that we didn't think we had in order to succeed, is given to us by that love that we have for whatever it is that we wish to be in relationship with. This is one of the greatest secrets on the surface of the earth. Love directly rewards the lover by giving that which in us loves all that we need to deepen and develop further our relationship with whatever it is that we love. But again, we have to recognize and realize that there are parts of us that do not want us to go out further. And when we can test it, and that's all I'm talking about. A person listening to us hears these ideas, here's some new knowledge, test it, test it, test it. And you'll find that in it is the truth that when we will give our hearts to something that we love, that the love that we have will give us more and more, and we will find ourselves gradually making the changes in our lives that we thought were impossible.
And will that also allow people to stop hitting the same wall of failure again and again, which so often seems to happen, even though they're striving for that success?
Yes. Well, let's qualify it a little bit. You know, unfortunately today, people equate the idea of success with having lots of possessions and powers and authority and people under them. And so when they imagine what it would like to be a successful person like that, Heather, as they hold that picture in their mind, naturally that individual is flooded with certain positive feelings because he or she is looking at their life sometime in the future when they're going to have easy street. But what happens is that that image soon passes when we run into the reality of all the things that stand in our way, not to mention the fear of not succeeding according to the image that we've held in our mind. And so what happens over time for us, and it steals all the pleasure and beauty out of our lives, is that we begin to try to become something in this world and wind up hating what we have to do in order to achieve what we believe is going to make us free. So we spend our lives a slave to a false idea instead of doing what it is that we really want to do. And maybe, you know, here's the mind that says, you know, well, I'd really like to be an artist, or I'd really love to be on a radio station someplace, or I'd really love to be a teacher in a school because I love geology or whatever it is, but there's no money in it. And that person doesn't know that what they're listening to in their own mind is not who they are. It belongs to a world that's gone mad, and that steals from the person the possibility, and here's the key idea, of not being someone who has to chase some end through means that make them miserable and angry, but finding in what they do the end itself, so that the means and the end become one thing, and a person finds in that purpose the true pleasure of life because they're literally living out what it is that their heart of hearts has directed them to do in order to discover the highest truth of themselves.
So you mentioned the fear of not succeeding that a lot of people have, which of course is silly because if you don't start, you've already not succeeded. But there's also that fear of success that a lot of people have, and they almost fight against the greatness that they're capable of.
Well, we hear about that, the fear of success. But again, if we look at it, I think we can tie it to something a little closer to home. In this instance, have you ever known somebody in a bad relationship that wouldn't leave it?
Yes.
What do you think's going on there?
They're in a comfort zone?
That's one way of saying it, but a little deeper still, when we say they're in the comfort zone, what we're really saying is that that person would rather have something that they know, even though it's terrible, than to leave it and have to go into something that they don't know what will happen to them.
So it's not a fear of success, it's a fear of the unknown.
Yes. And so rather than step out into this new world, a new relationship, or just for this instance, you know, it's like, how wise do you have to be to get out of a burning building? Right? Not too smart, but we stay in there, and then we smolder, we fume, and we blame the person we're living with. Well, it's a similar situation, that lots of times life brings opportunities to us, and we look at the opportunity, and our mind improperly, unconsciously, projects what may happen to us. I'll give you a very powerful idea. Did you know that no fear is possible in the human mind until that human mind negatively imagines what may happen to the individual. In other words, all fear is the product of negative imagination.
Wow.
Well, can you see it a little bit?
I'm
sitting here and I'm thinking, oh God, Heather's going to call me, or you have to call some person for an important business conversation, or maybe something in your future we were talking about where this could mean more success to me. And as you're sitting there, the mind starts to imagine negative outcome. And as it presents these negative possibilities, then it tries to protect itself from its own imagining. And we get caught up in confusion and anxiety when, and here's the point of all that we're talking about, if I could simply see that any fear that I have is literally my own mind working against itself, and that the fear has no other cause outside of that level of consciousness that's working without me seeing it, well, the moment I see it, I can drop the fear because I understand it isn't based in reality. It's just based in a mind running away with its own imagination, and that I needn't listen to it, and that I can become a completely different person the minute I'm willing to drop those fears.
How can those fears and stress and anxiety and other negative emotions that hold us back be transformed into fuel for success?
Well, for one thing, all of us know what it's like to be anxious and frightened. And would you agree that it's pretty exhausting?
Yes.
Even 5 minutes, as far as I'm concerned, in anxiety or fear or stress is wasted when we can understand that it has no reason, no right to exist in us. But there it is, and I'm anxious or I'm frightened, and my mind is racing around. Maybe my body is running me from pillar to post. Now, what would happen to me if I had all of that energy that instead of being wasted trying to combat fearful ideas that my own mind is producing, and I simply drop the fear or the anxiety at the moment it came up, wouldn't I have a lot more energy?
Sure.
Well, there's your answer. The reason that men and women are so exhausted today is because they're fighting a 12-round fight in the ring with themselves every day. So how could we possibly have creative energies or energies to love other individuals or, as we were saying earlier, love to pursue my own interests? I'm drained. I'm actually exhausted because my mind has dragged me through a series of wars in anticipation of what may or may not happen to me. And at the end of the day, I'm like, I've been through a battle, and all I want is what? Maybe, you know, a martini and a bed and a television or whatever it is that turns a person off. In other words, makes us feel comfortable. We can do so much better than that, Heather. So much better.
A lot of people might come back to that and say, oh, but I don't have money, so I'm in a bad situation, or I have health problems, so I can't do this or that. How can they stop those things from having power over them?
They have to get sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Again, it's easy.
You know what it is? Look, I don't mind. I use my own life, but I'm inviting you into this. Did you ever have a moment, Heather, where you were looking out at your life or you were sitting, whatever you were doing, and there were certain things that had been going on, and maybe it was a bad relationship, maybe it was, you know, you kept avoiding a situation, maybe there was something else, and one day you had tried to walk around it so many times, and I call it a close encounter of the truthful kind, a crisis. A crisis is a close encounter of the truthful kind. I can't hide from this anymore. I'm sick and tired of being afraid. I'm sick and tired of fawning in front of other human beings, of spending my time saying yes to people that I really don't want to be around, let alone help, because all they do is use me, and I'd rather be used than be alone. And one day a person just can't do that anymore, and that person reaches a crisis. Now, when the person reaches the crisis, the crisis is that they don't know what to do anymore. They know they can't do what they've always done, but they don't know what else to do. And so a person kind of just lets go. He gives up. She just releases it, terrified of what will become of them because they're not going to go fawn in front of those people anymore. Maybe they'll lose their job. They're not going to pretend to like individuals that they secretly wish they didn't have to spend time with because they were unpleasant, whatever it may be. And every one of us who has been through a situation like that, maybe with drugs and alcohol or with enabling other individuals, not one of us hasn't gone through that. And on the other side of it, come out a better, stronger, wiser, kinder human being. Not one of us. And why? Because we came to the end of what we could no longer be or do. And there was, and maybe someone helped us through it and told us, you know, you need to do this. You got to stop hurting yourself. You got to stop giving your life away. But in the end, it was just me. It was just you, whoever you are, that reached that point where we could no longer be and do who we had been and what we were doing. And God help us, and He does. We come out on the other side of that, and it wasn't. There was no manual for that, you know. There's, you can listen to people who know something true and will tell you the truth of it, but when the time comes and the rock and the hard place appears, it's just you, the rock and the hard place. But when we can't continue being who we have been, then on the other side of that, a new order of ourself emerges, and we are a different human being, and we know it, and we recognize that what we thought was against us was never against us. It was always for our own self-interest, our true success.
What's this process of spiritual fusion that you write about?
Well, we actually have been talking a little bit about it. Spiritual fusion, it's a little bit like what happens when, let's say that I'm in a relationship. We'll go back to this relationship business. I'm in a relationship with someone, and I know that it's not good for me, or maybe I've just outgrown the man or the woman. And all of us know what that's like. We reach a certain point in our lives, and the paths, they part. Nobody's fault directly. And at that point, a person realizes that I have to make a change. Now, when we look at our lives and we know we have to make a change like that, are we not divided? Part of me wants to make the change, and a part of me is afraid to do it.
Because right? It's unknown.
Because it's unknown. So what I'm talking about first here is something that we talk about in all of my works, about being the mind is divided. And the mind that is divided, even if this is in the New Testament, Christ said, a house divided can't stand. When a mind is divided, it is actually working against itself, creating stress, because those opposites are always pushing and pulling, and we find ourselves running from pillar to post. One minute we're going to, the next minute we're not. So what we're speaking of when we talk about fusion, that we're saying when a person can no longer go through and be what he's done and been, then these opposites, this divided mind, it literally sees itself. One of the key principles in my works, Heather, has to do with self-observation, learning to watch, to be a quiet observer of one's own heart and one's own mind. And the purpose of that awareness that's born through this observation is that it actually produces the possibility of this fusion of where the mind that was formerly divided can be brought together. There's a word that Christ was always talking about, and the word was metanoia. It meant a new mind. The Greek. And what we're talking about, a new mind, is what happens when an individual realizes that he or she can't continue doing and being what they've been doing and being, but because of the fear that won't let them make the change, they reach this point, this pivotal turning point in their life. And when they see that they can no longer be what they've been, that seeing, you know how, have you ever picked up a hot skillet, Heather?
I try not to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. But when you do, you don't stand there and hold it, do you?
No, you drop it.
Instantly, yes.
Yeah.
Because the body knows that it'll harm itself if it holds on to it. Actually, the thoughts about the skillet come after the skillet's hit the floor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That same intelligence that won't let us hold on to a burning skillet in our body is just a fraction of this beautiful spiritual intelligence that won't let us hold on to a hot thought, an angry feeling. And when we can begin to wake up a little bit, observe ourselves, have this awareness, that fusion that takes place is when this awareness recognizes for us. An example, here I am, I'm anxious, I'm so anxious, I don't know what to do with myself. But when I'm anxious, would you agree that anxiety is painful, Heather?
Yes.
But when I'm anxious and I'm racing to get through whatever it is that I'm anxious about, my mind isn't on the fact that I'm holding on to a hot skillet. My mind is on the happy land that I'm going to get to, where I'll be free of the anxiety when I arrive. Follow me?
Okay.
See? That's a divided mind. On one hand, I'm filled with anxious thoughts and feelings, but what I'm seeing in my mind's eye is that I've got to step on the accelerator and get over to that place so I can get this anxiety out of me. So on one hand, I have the pleasure of the promise of a time to come when I won't be anxious, but in the present moment, I'm a wreck. Isn't that a divided person?
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, he's filled with the promise of a day or a moment when he won't be anxious if he just does whatever it is that he thinks he has to do. But on the other hand, while he's doing it, he is absolutely tearing himself apart with anxious thoughts and feelings. What awareness does, what higher awareness does, is it creates a fusion. It allows us to see where it is that our own mind is telling us on one hand that we have to rush, and on the other hand is showing us how great things will be when we stop rushing. So when we can see this divided action on our part, then we can let it go, because there is literally a fusion that takes place in the mind, because a conscious mind will not compromise itself. A mind, a heart awakened to itself, Heather, will not harm itself or any other human being.
We're talking a lot about change, but I know that there's some people that will be listening to this and saying, well, my life isn't so bad, you know, I'm kind of happy where I am now. How important is it to go through change in order to achieve greatness?
It's everything. It's everything. Besides which, you can't avoid change.
That's right. It's going to happen whether you like it or not.
No, I mean, that's the way we are. See, here's another example of a divided mind. On one hand, we sit and think to ourselves of all the ways in which we want something new to happen to us. But the only thing that we want new to happen to us is the stuff we imagine. If we didn't imagine it, then it's not new and we don't want it. See, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Because we spend 50% of our lives rejecting what life brings us. And when you reject what life brings you, you can't learn, because you can't resist and learn at the same time. It's impossible. So the mind, on one hand, says, I want all these new experiences, but I only want the experiences I want. So whatever life is going to do, if it changes and it doesn't change according to the way I want it to change, then I throw it away. And I'm saying that when we throw away what life brings us, these unwanted moments, we are throwing away the possibility of discovering not only the greater part of ourself that is capable of transcending whatever comes our way, but the part of ourself that is made to grow through participating in the way life changes. Because when life changes and we can see the value in it, meaning what it reflects in us, we change and grow too.
So why do you say a new beginning is now or never?
Because it is.
But then there's another now and another now.
No, not to the. Have you ever heard of the word mañana? It's a Spanish word. Mañana, it means tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, human beings on planet Earth have mañana mind. So, you know, that's what we say. You know, yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's now or never. It's everything's now, but it'll be now later. No, it won't be now later. It's now. I either see the truth of something and I act, or my mind makes a picture of it. And I live in the theater of imagination. And the dreamer always gets disturbed. The dreamer is never satisfied, because the dream always runs out. And then the dreamer has to make a new dream. We're made, Heather, created to participate in the moment, in the living presence of this present moment that is never-endingly unfolding and stirring in us all of the things that we are made to be a participant in, both for the pleasure and the transformation of within ourselves. That's what real life is. It is a pure and eternal creative moment that we are intended to be in relationship with. And when we find that, we not only become unstoppable in life, but we ourselves have joined ourselves to something that is eternal in its very being, and whose very presence is pleasure, instead of a time to come in which we get something that makes us feel proud or whatever it is we imagine we want.
So if it's now or never, how can we access the fountain of fresh starts that you say is inside of us all?
Before we go on with this, can I tell people where they can find out something about the work that I'm doing?
And sure. If
you go to Guy Finley, G-U-Y-F-I-N-L-E-Y, GuyFinley.com, online there, Heather, there is a multimedia award-winning website that is filled with free content. In fact, there's a free starter pack there where a person can get download MP3, get free posters, a host of wonderful gifts, nothing to join, and they can receive weekly a key lesson that my foundation sends out, a short newsletter filled with the kind of helpful ideas that you and I have been talking about.
Back to this fountain of fresh starts, because when you say that to me, I think, okay, so I've got a fresh start now, I've got a fresh start in 10 minutes, I've got a fresh start mañana. So how does that fit in with the now or never concept?
Because if we really make a fresh start, it isn't a mental idea. It's not an idea. A fresh start isn't an idea. It's an actual relationship with the moment where, to make a true fresh start, I drop everything. I wake up, I bring myself into the present moment, and I let go of that stream of thoughts and feelings, even the positive ones, so that I can be in that flow of the power of this present moment, whose creative energies, whose basis is love, I want to add, so that I can actually drink from that fountain and from it be refreshed. And it sounds like I'm using a metaphor, and of course it's words, but I'm saying that, Heather, right now, and everyone who's listening to us, if you would just bring yourself right into that chair, right into that car, wherever you are listening, and be right where you are, let go of those thoughts and feelings that have been defining you and confining you, because whatever defines us confines us, and drop it. You're not going to lose anything. You're going to gain all of this marvelous momentum, this new energy, to go on with what you're doing. And then do it again. There's no end to the number of times in which a person can renew their attention in the present moment and gain from that refreshment a whole new view, a whole new insight into their whole life. That's not an exaggeration.
You wrote this little book called 30 Keys to Change Your Destiny. What are some of those keys to change?
Well, we were talking about anxiety. How about this one? As an example, even at 1,000,000 miles an hour, an anxious thought still takes you nowhere. If I'm going nowhere fast because I'm listening to anxious thoughts and feelings, and I can see the truth of that, then to let that go, to drop it, is to instantaneously do what? Empower myself. Let's change this so you can see what I'm saying. Most of our mindset, Heather, especially today, we look around and everybody is trying to tell everybody how to be powerful. You know, if you just, you get these 7 habits, if you buy this course and practice this thing, you know, 7 days a week for the next 2 months, by God, you're going to become a guru or a master or a Fortune 500, whatever you're going to become. And I take completely the opposite approach. I can prove to anyone who's willing to see it, that it isn't powers that we need over people and places and things. It isn't more possessions we need to empower us. What we need to do is to wake up inside of ourselves to those thoughts and feelings that are making us powerless. Anxiety makes us powerless. Stress steals our power. Hatred, anger, worry, doubt debilitates us. We don't need to be strong. We need to stop identifying with those thoughts and feelings that are making us weak. Then, thank God, we don't need to depend on anyone or anything outside of us for the power we're looking for, because we have simply stopped taking power away from ourselves by looking for it in the wrong place. It becomes an inside job, and no one can make us a victim when we understand that the inner determines the outer.
But no one makes us a victim anyhow. We make ourselves a victim.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's what we're saying here. And the world doesn't make us someone who can't succeed. And the world doesn't stop us from finding what we love. and the world doesn't ruin our relationships. We live with something within ourselves that we are unconscious to. And because we are unaware of it, it has power over us. If we want real power in this life, we have to gain awareness over that which we have been asleep to in our own hearts and minds. And as we awaken, just like the sun rises and sheds light on a pasture, nothing that wants to live in the darkness can stay in the light. And those things, that those thoughts and feelings that torment us, that debilitate us, they cannot live in the light of this awareness that we've been talking about.
So what's the secret to overcoming any discouraging thought or feeling? You've got some simple technique for that.
Well, it begins with understanding, and I'll say it simply as I know how. Negative states have no right to live inside of us, period. Can you see that most of us, if not all of us, actually believe that there's something valuable in being discouraged? Can you see that?
I'm not sure.
Come on.
I don't think there's anything
valuable. Then why do it? I'm challenging you. Then why do it? Then if there's nothing of value in this being discouraged, then why do human beings discourage? Why do they get discouraged?
That's a good question.
That's what I'm asking everyone to look at. Because there is something inside of us that finds value in discouragement, that finds value in hate, that finds value in anger, the things that nobody wants to talk about. If they have no value, why do we cling to them? Why do we immerse ourselves in them? And when we can discover the answer to that, we have begun the process of discovering a life that will not permit those dark thoughts and feelings to live in us. And when we will not let those dark thoughts and feelings live in us, Heather, then it is the same as the beginning of the dawn of a completely new order of our own being, which is all I'm interested in talking about. That is what we're here for, to become a new human being born out of discovering where it is that we have been in unconscious relationship with, finding value in these thoughts and feelings that make victims of us.
Now, you say people shouldn't seek revenge. Now, obviously, again, that's a negative feeling that's not going to take us anywhere. But what's the bigger picture to how the universe handles that?
That's a great question. And one of my favorite ones, by the way. And again, this is only personally verifiable. I mean, whoever's listening to us, Heather, the only way they're going to know the truth of what I'm saying to you is when they are willing to find out the truth of it for themselves through direct experience. Everyone on this planet, Heather, you and me included, our nature is our reward, and there is no other reward. We look out and we see people, and they seem to be successful, high achievers, so forth and so on. But we know, and I don't know about there up in Toronto, here in the States, big companies the last few years, they're run by thieves, whores, and crooks. They are. People who, it's almost beyond belief. Here's a man or a woman, they have $2 billion, and they have to steal from the people that own stock in the company. Now, that's a whole story in itself. That proves that fear cannot be appeased, because greed is the outcome of fear, of unappeasable fear. So here's a person completely ridden with greed. They can't help themselves but to steal. Now, what are we looking at a person like that? We're looking at someone who does not know, does he or she, what they are doing to themselves, else they wouldn't do it. So we look at somebody like that and we hate them. We resent them deeply for being that kind of human being. But what we don't know is that no one is suffering more than that human being. No one. He can have a 500-foot yacht. He can have a 50,000-square-foot home. And that man or that woman is a miserable human being, because in compromising themselves in order to achieve what they thought would make them powerful, they have lost their soul. Now, the way we can know this is true about others is to see it in ourselves. Have any of us ever told a lie to protect ourselves? Most of us have. Doesn't a lie make us nervous?
Yeah, well, I'm not a good liar, so it sure makes me nervous.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of, it really, and then you know, it makes you a wreck. Then you got to remember the lie, on and on, right?
Yeah.
And here's the point. The nature that tells a lie suffers from the lie it tells. The nature that hates suffers from the hatred it holds. So when we can see that we don't have to be the one who exacts justice on these people who have wronged us, because there already exists in this beautiful intelligence that you and I have been talking about, a perfect system of justice. It sees moment to moment to moment that each and every one of us receive exactly what we have given. And when we know that from ourselves, we don't have to carry around anything anymore for people that have hurt us. They are receiving their just rewards because they live in a universe that metes out that justice perfectly, moment to moment.
You wrote about creating peace in the world and that there are three thieves that take that peace away. What are those three thieves?
We don't create peace. We don't create love. We don't create kindness. These are eternal qualities that existed before you and I did, and certainly before any human being, else the human being couldn't have imagined or longed for it. No peace, happiness, contentment, strength. These are eternal qualities, Heather, that we're meant to be in relationship with. We don't create them. But, to the question, we can create things that steal from us happiness and peace and contentment.
Why would we want to do that?
We don't want it. It's not us that wants to do it. That's what we've been talking about all along. There's no me that wants to steal happiness from me, but there's a part of me that would rather, well, let's talk about one of these three thieves that you've asked me about. How many of us think about, you go someplace and we start thinking about somebody that hurt us. We start thinking about what other people are thinking about us.
Mm-hmm.
That's a disturbance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, why would I want to disturb myself thinking about what someone else is thinking about me?
Exactly.
I don't want to do it. Something in me does, though. That's a big thing. How about this? Have you ever carried around a resentment for another human being? All of us have done that. I call it building a case. Well, every time you sit and think about somebody that hurt you, right to that question you just asked me about justice, and I'm sitting there thinking about them, the more I think about them, the more unhappy I am. So my thoughts about that person are actually stealing my peace from me, aren't they?
Yeah.
And one of my favorite and the last of the three thieves of the peace is how we always comparing ourselves to others. We often look at someone else or we look at the world and we measure ourselves according to what the world says would make us successful. And the more we measure ourselves, the more we come up short and the more miserable we become. So why would I want to make myself miserable? Why would I want to steal from myself peace? I don't want to do it. But there is, again, that part of me that is unconscious that only knows how to create a sense of self by actually stealing from me the very thing that I want most in life, peace, happiness, contentment, and love.
So you tell the listeners one more time where they can find out more information?
Yes, Heather, and I do. I invite everyone who's been listening to us, if you want to find out some of the important things that Heather and I have been discussing, visit GuyFinley.com. GuyFinley, GuyFinley.com. There's a host of free gifts there. There's video, there's download MP3s, all kinds of wonderful gifts right on the homepage, plus a great newsletter, GuyFinley.com. And maybe sometime come down to Southern Oregon where we have a great time. And, of course, you'll find out about a host of other ways in which you can learn about these principles that Heather and I have been discussing.
Well, thank you so much, Guy, for bringing us your inspiring insights today, and thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome, Heather. I hope we didn't heat things up too much over there.
To get 14 free ebooks on success by Joe Vitale, Jim Edwards, Yannick Silver, T. Harv Eker, and more, just sign up for my free Success Unwrapped e-course and newsletter by sending a blank email to successunwrapped@goldenreports.com.
This has been Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Be sure to tune in to the next edition of Success Unwrapped, helping you to unwrap and discover your own potential for success. Until next time, keep unwrapping. I'm Heather Vail.
There's a new survey on my website that you can find by clicking on the banner on the right-hand side near the top,
at successunwrappedradio.com. The survey is to help gather information on your opinions on podcast advertisements. So please answer the questions honestly to help us provide the best podcast possible.